for the moment, forget about all the hand-wringing going on inside the news industry about terrible finances. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik brings us this story about Bloomberg News. It's expanding its ambition and reach on a medium it hasn't always taken seriously, television.
Everything is a little different at Bloomberg News. Bloomberg TV anchor Margaret Brennan is trying to explain this to me as we talk on segments of a padded purple coil that stretches for about 30 feet.
This is apparently a piece of artwork that we're sitting in. I don't know if we're supposed to be sitting in it, but those two guys are sleeping in it.
Those guys are probably asleep because staffers feel as if they live here. Bloomberg gives away a lot of food because bosses discourage taking time away from this block-long glass spaceship of an office. The company's hyperkinetic pace reflects the metabolism of its founder, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and holy cow, has Bloomberg News been investing furiously in building up its staff. On one day alone, the overall news service hired four Pulitzer Prize winners away from the Wall Street Journal. Bloomberg News leapt at the chance to buy the money-losing but prestigious Business Week magazine. And Bloomberg's TV network has scooped up journalists from such outlets as ABC, CNN, and NPR in trying to build a slicker television product. Brennan came over last year from CNBC.
It was a gamble. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say it was a clear choice. But for me, you know, a year in, I know it was the right choice, because I've done a lot in that short period of time. There's a lot more to be done.
Brennan now anchors a briskly paced show on international business from a studio in the middle of the TV newsroom here in New York. She's conversant in Arabic and has hosted from Dubai and Saudi Arabia, as well as Ireland and Davos. She could have stayed at CNBC, the ratings leader in TV business news, which mint stars like Maria Bartiromo, the original so-called money honey. But its viewers are often treated to economics as sport.
All you guys want to cut taxes en route to bringing down the deficit. That's the current
principle. No, I didn't say anything about taxes, Steve. Stop spending. Stop spending. Stop spending.
It's tempting to join the food fight that sometimes passes for business news. Who can scream loudest and so forth.
Norman Perlstein is the former top editor of the Wall Street Journal and Time, Inc. He's now chief content officer for Bloomberg News.
We think there's an audience that is willing and able to be more reflective, and I think our television tries to speak to it.
Bloomberg has made a lot of money serving precisely that audience. After all, Bloomberg News is an offshoot of Bloomberg's famed financial services business. The specialized computer terminal called the Bloomberg has been slicing and dicing increasingly sophisticated proprietary data for clients like banks and governments and investment firms for a generation. People pay nearly $20,000 a year for each of 300,000 terminals. Daniel Gross is the economics columnist for Yahoo Finance. He says the TV network retains the DNA of its parent company.
CNBC is a lot about, you know, they are seeing their analogs as kind of MSNBC and Fox and CNN. You know, left, right, two sides of an issue. Bloomberg, while it is on cable, stands apart from that because it is has more of that Bloomberg mentality.
Gross says Bloomberg is fighting not for a mass audience, but global thought leaders, people who make decisions in the worlds of finance, government, and business.
When you're in your business hotel in China or Japan or South Africa or whatever, and you turn on the TV, on that system will be, you know, CNBC Europe or CNBC Asia, as well as Bloomberg TV.
But right now, Bloomberg has so few American viewers that it doesn't even pay Nielsen to estimate how many are watching. David Rhodes is a former Fox News executive who is now the head of Bloomberg TV in the U.S.
Cable news punches above its weight when it comes to influence. It would be hard not to conclude that from looking at the impact of cable news on media today.
That's not the way people at Bloomberg used to look at the TV channel. Historically, television was thought of as just another way to remind subscribers of the Bloomberg brand. Rhodes says the channel now has greater journalistic ambitions.
What I'm hoping we can do is breaking news in the space that we cover on television. And I think if we can do that reliably, that's a huge accomplishment.
Anchor Margaret Brennan could have stayed on a safer path at CNBC. She had plenty of appearances on NBC's Today Show and MSNBC, and she was clearly on the rise.
Is there a trade-off with not being, have some sense of yourself as a trading room celebrity? I never wanted to be that. I wanted to be someone who could talk to interesting and inform people all the time, and now I have an excuse to do that.
In doing that, Brennan says she's helping to define the new Bloomberg TV. David Folkenflik, NPR News, New York.
More All Things Considered right after this.
President Obama's tax deal with Republicans has some Democrats asking a question. The question is why they would vote to pass a policy they passionately oppose. The deal extends tax cuts for the middle class as well as unemployment benefits, which Democrats wanted. It also extends tax cuts for the wealthy and expands the federal budget shortfall, which many Democrats oppose. Now, some are asking how they could change the terms of the deal. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
Democrat Jim McGovern just finished a successful campaign for re-election. He says for 6 months he traveled his Massachusetts district arguing in favor of extending the Bush-era tax cuts for middle-income taxpayers and letting taxes rise for wealthy Americans. So McGovern is none too pleased with the agreement the president reached to continue all the tax cuts for another 2 years.
I said it for 6 months because I actually believed it was the right policy. And I think it's a policy that was worth fighting for. I wish the president had put up a bigger fight. I hope Democrats in the House and Senate put up a bigger fight. I think it's that important of an issue.
McGovern says he'll probably vote against what he labels a bad deal. And he's certainly not alone. Across the Capitol, Vermont Independent Bernie Sanders said he intends to do everything in his power to, in his words, stand up for the American middle class and defeat this agreement, including a filibuster. Speaker Nancy Pelosi issued a statement in which she stopped well short of endorsing the plan, saying that discussions between the president and the Democratic caucus will continue in the days ahead. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has yet to add his endorsement to the agreement reached with Republicans, indicating he considers it a work in progress.
It's something that's not done yet. Let's make that clear. We're working through all that.
It's clear Democrats hope to change the agreement, which would trim payroll taxes for Social Security and Medicare, a provision they like, but also would set a $5 million exemption for the estate tax, something many Democrats say is too high. The package is estimated to add hundreds of billions of dollars to the deficit over the next 2 years, which gives many Democrats pause. Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska says it's a tough call.
The fact it's not paid for is always going to be a matter of heartburn. But there are difficult choices you make here, and the question is whether there's a greater shock to the economy by having taxes go up or by having them not go up and adding to the debt. I think the general consensus is that the shock to the economy by having taxes go up right now is greater than adding to the debt.
Republicans are generally pleased with the agreement. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says in his eyes, there's little left to talk about.
The agreement is essentially final. Senator Reid and I will have to discuss procedurally how we go forward. And as you know, in the Senate, that requires a pretty broad agreement as to how you go forward.
The White House dispatched Vice President Biden to meet with Senate Democrats over lunch yesterday. He reportedly told them it was the best deal the administration could get with Republicans, but it has dispirited many Democrats, like Congressman Jim Moran of Virginia, who says he'll vote against it but predicts the agreement will pass.
The easy vote is to say yes to tax cuts and no to spending cuts. That's what we'll continue to do, and we'll continue to kick that proverbial can down the road.
It's likely the administration will attempt to boost the enthusiasm of some Democrats by agreeing to special interest tax breaks and other sweeteners. All indications are there are likely to be more deals to be made in the days ahead. Brian Naylor, NPR News, The Capitol.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. President Obama sought to position himself this week in the middle of the political spectrum. He defended a deal on tax cuts for a second straight day. He said he had to deal with Republicans he called hostage takers, and he also criticized Democrats who argue that he should have been tougher in his negotiations with Republicans. That leaves at least two questions. One has to do with the politics. The other has to do with whether the tax deal will actually help the economy. We have two stories this morning, beginning with NPR White House correspondent Ari Shapiro.
The tax cut deal that President Obama reached either shows that he can work with Republicans or that he can cave to Republicans. Mr. Obama says he had no choice.
A long political fight that carried over into next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy, and it would be a bad deal for the American people.
He has argued for months that Republicans were holding the middle class hostage to tax cuts for the wealthy, and he embraced that metaphor again at his news conference yesterday.
I think it's tempting not to negotiate with hostage takers, unless the hostage gets harmed. Then people will question the wisdom of that strategy. In this case, the hostage was the American people, and I was not willing to see them get harmed.
The tone of the news conference was, on the whole, defensive. President Obama insisted that he got a good deal.
I mean, the truth of the matter is, from the Republican perspective, the earned income tax credit, the college tuition tax credit, the child tax credit, all those things that are so important for so many families across the country, those are things they really opposed.
Those explanations did not stop an onslaught of attacks from activists and lawmakers on the left.
It's not a negotiation when the other side sticks to their guns and you keep whittling, you know, moving back on what it is that you want.
John Erivosis is editor and founder of the website America Blog.
You know, the president likes to say, oh my God, we couldn't cut off unemployment benefits for millions of Americans. That's right, we couldn't. And you really think the Republicans would have cut them off right before Christmas? Really?
President Obama says, yes, they would have. He framed liberal activists like Erivosis as pie-in-the-sky idealists. This country was founded on compromise, he said.
I couldn't go through the front door of this country's founding. And, you know, if we were really thinking about ideal positions, we wouldn't have a union. So my job is to make sure that we have a North Star out there. What is helping the American people live out their lives?
This reminds Jack Howard of his experience during the first Bush administration. Howard was the White House's liaison to Congress when President Bush enraged his fellow Republicans by raising taxes. He says the backlash was ferocious.
It went on for a long time. It got very personal. It got very bitter.
And what were the long-term consequences of that?
Well, our negotiating ability and our leverage from then on was all kind of in the context of, yeah, but you guys went and raised taxes, so how do we know you're not going to try to cut the legs out from us on this next one?
This may not be such a turning point for President Obama's relationship with Democrats. President Bush had violated his Read My Lips, No New Taxes promise, and this president is not reneging on such a key campaign principle. Moderate Democrats prefer to compare this moment to the 1990s, when President Clinton triangulated by moving to the center after Republicans took over Congress. Jim Kessler is vice president for policy at the centrist Democratic group Third Way.
If the president wants to control the agenda and have any chance of getting reelected in 2012, he's going to have to own the center of the electorate. And after his first 2 years, he did not own that center.
He thinks fair-minded Democrats have started coming around to this tax deal now that they've had a chance to look at it more closely.
Sort of like the situation in sports where you traded away your one of your favorite players and you're really upset, and then you look underneath and you say, well, we got some pretty decent players in return.
Republicans and Democrats say President Obama could help himself by improving relationships with Congress. Indeed, last week, the president said he'd like to invite congressional leaders to Camp David, and Monday night, members of Congress visited the White House for a Christmas party. But at the beginning of the party, while the lawmakers were admiring the White House Christmas decorations, President Obama was next door announcing the tax deal to reporters. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, Washington.
The president said he accepted extended tax cuts for the wealthy in order to get a deal that helps the economy. So, will it actually help? We put that question to NPR's John Itzde.
In addition to retaining the Bush tax cuts for all income levels, the package includes a 13-month extension of unemployment benefits, a one-year cut in payroll taxes, and the extension of some business tax credits. Economist Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics says the total package will help the economy grow at a healthier pace and create jobs.
Instead of a year of job growth that's insufficient to bring down unemployment, we'd still be hanging around 10% for the year. This will bring enough job growth to bring down unemployment in a meaningful way by year's end.
Zandi says the package should add about 1 percentage point to the growth rate next year. But Bob Williams of the Tax Policy Center says the package includes several items that will do little for growth.
Cutting the estate tax is not going to have any stimulative effect. Patching the alternative minimum tax one more year will not stimulate the economy. Maintaining the Bush tax cuts for high-income individuals will not stimulate the economy.
That's because high-income taxpayers are much more likely to save their tax cut than spend it, says Williams.
We know that people who have lower incomes spend more out of an additional dollar than do high-income folks.
That's one reason that Williams and Zandi agree that the biggest bang for the buck in this package will come from extending unemployment benefits. They're likely to be spent, increasing demand in the economy, and helping to create jobs. One of the highest profile provisions in the package is a 2 percentage point reduction in Social Security payroll taxes. Williams says that will not provide as much stimulus per dollar as the Making Work Pay tax cut in President Obama's original stimulus bill. That's because more of the payroll tax cut will go to high-income individuals.
Single people with earnings below $20,000 will get less under the payroll tax reduction than they got under Making Work Pay. Couples earning less than $40,000 will find themselves in the same situation. Those are the people most likely to spend money, and yet you're reducing the tax cuts for them and putting less money in their pockets.
For instance, a couple making $36,000 a year would get a payroll tax cut of $720 under the new plan. Under the Making Work Pay program, they were getting a tax credit of $800. That program expires at the end of the year and won't be extended by this new tax deal. Meanwhile, a couple making $200,000 could get $4,000 from the payroll tax cut. That would be a pleasant surprise for higher-income households who got little or nothing from the Making Work Pay program. It phased out for households with incomes over $75,000 a year. In all, the package of tax cuts and unemployment benefits could cost the budget about $700 billion over the next 2 years, according to the White House. That means the federal deficit will remain around $1.3 trillion in 2011, says Mark Zandi. But, he says, it's a reasonable course of action under the circumstances.
Because it ensures that the economy will gain traction and grow, and a necessary condition for addressing our fiscal problems, at least over the longer term, is a growing economy.
But Zandi says once the economy is growing again, policymakers will have to pivot quickly to address the deficit problem before it becomes a crisis. John Itzde, NPR News, Washington.